Welcome back to another episode of Heart of the Global Sheep Producers Next Generation program, where we chat to farmers around the world. Today, we are with Hamish, a New Zealand farmer. We recorded this fresh off the back of Lambex, so we chatted not only about his story, but what we learnt during our week together with farmers from around the world. We chat about how and when he got into farming, what that looks like in New Zealand, strengths, challenges of the industry, plus just how good it is to be a sheep farmer.
No, thank you so much for joining me today. We're fresh off our week together at Lambex in Adelaide. So hopefully I know the answers to most of these questions, but I'm really excited to chat to you because I feel like there's lots of things, I don't know, as a farmer that make you not different, but I enjoyed learning about how you prepared to heading back to the farm, what you're doing with the property now, all of those sorts of things. But tell me about you. So who are you and where are you recording this from? You might be able to hear the rain on my roof. So I don't know if it's raining where you are, but no, where are you?
I'm just about 20 minutes out of the capital city of New Zealand in Wellington. We farm about 450 hectares of steep hill country farm land, sheep and beef farm. We don't have any rain at the moment, but we've just started our like typical spring equinox winds, which basically from about now until Christmas time, most of the weather is gale force nor'westerlies. So that's why you may have seen me walking with a little bit of a hunch because I'm just used to bracing for the wind. But you'll be happy with the rain, no doubt. WA, it's not a high rainfall area.
No, it's good and really good timing for our crops too. So if we just get a bit more rain like this over the next 2 months, then it won't be a bad year for us. We're in the central wheat belt, so it might be different elsewhere. But no, it's good rain.
Yeah, that's good.
What do you farm? What are you doing there?
We are farming, but we're basically a breeding farm that tries to finish as many of our own stock as possible. So in a dry spring, summer, we will probably have to sell quite a few store lambs. So last year we probably sold half of our store lambs into finishers. We've managed to finish the other half. But we're running about 1,600 breeding ewes with replacements. They're all Romtex ewes, so 50% Romney and 50% Texel is roughly how they're made up, but it's a registered breed over here. And I guess the mindset for going into them was to get a maternal ewe, which the Romney provides. So we're getting fecundity and mothering ability, milking whatnot from them, but we're getting carcass yield from the Texel half. So then at least when we're breeding for our replacements, all of the male offspring are going to have some of that carcass yield in them. And then we also have run about 20% of our ewes, 25% of our ewes have a Suftex ram over them. So that's giving us that hybrid vigor for a much faster finishing carcass. And they tend to lamb about a month earlier, which was about the 5th of July. And then our main new flock, they start lambing in about the 10th of August. So I was getting a few updates while we were in Adelaide about what was going on at home. And I was just sort of hoping that they'd hold off until I got back, which they pretty much did. It was about the last 3 days of our trip, they really started pouring out, which was good to see that the teasers did their job. Mm. Yeah, then we also run an Angus herd of cows with, well, half of them are Angus and the other half are Speckled Park. And we've put Speckled Park bulls over everything with the idea behind that to get cattle beasts that can handle our hill country, having a lot of the, I guess, Angus genetics behind them, but also the eating quality or the marbling factor with the Speckled Park. So that's where we're heading with our cattle policy.
Mm. And where, this is my favourite bit about your business, so how you direct market, but where's your other, tell me about that, but tell me about where else, what else are your markets over there? Because I, as we found out last week, it's quite different to say Western Australia and anywhere around the world. That was something fascinating for me, talking to everybody and just where they're selling their livestock to. It varied.
Yeah, so I guess like traditional markets for New Zealand sheep farmers are we've got a lot of processing companies who buy fat lambs and then effectively export them all over the world. So I think 97% of the lamb grown in New Zealand is exported, which is a huge number. I think we're sitting around 25 million lambs and nearly all of them are going overseas. So of that, a large proportion, maybe 40%, goes to China. And then our major markets are the UK, parts of the Middle East, and the US. Mm. So that system basically works by us drafting our lambs and loading them onto a truck. We get paid a cents per kilo of carcass weight price once they're processed, and effectively that's all we see. They go on a truck, they're gone, we get paid. We don't know where they end up. So that's sort of the majority of New Zealand. But yeah, because of our geographic location, it is probably one of the challenges that we face as a farm, because we're so isolated from a lot of the main farming areas. So rural supplies, vets, expertise, all that sort of thing. Contractors are hard to come by, but
yeah, right.
Because we're so close to Wellington, I've started a little red meat retail business selling lambs into the city through a mobile butcher's trailer into farmers markets and restaurants. So,
and what made you want to start that? Was it just the location, or I think you said to me it was something you'd thought about before going home to the farm?
Yeah, there's a few reasons why I wanted to start it. I guess a bit of my history. When I left school, went to uni, did an ag degree, and then went straight into area sales/agronomy. So I was selling proprietary seed for one of New Zealand's best grass seed companies to farmers and helping them with their agronomy plans and things like that. And then spent quite a bit of time as an agronomist on farm as well. After that, moved to Melbourne and spent 5 years living there for all my sins. Managed to spend half my time in the city doing the office part of the job, and then the other half of the job was traveling all over the eastern seaboard. Unfortunately, you guys were just you put your defenses up too quickly when COVID hit, and I actually never got over to WA, which was one big regret of being in Australia. But
still time.
Yeah, in time, yeah. the main thing, I found that supermarket meat, wherever I was living, I never had that like taste like home feeling. And so it sort of got me thinking that we have a pretty unique product, because our hill country is coastal. We've got quite a diverse range of pasture species, and maybe that's having an effect on our taste. But I had a really good butchery in Smith Street, Melbourne, Fitzroy North, that I managed to get some really nice lamb from. And it was like overpriced. It was way more expensive than the supermarket, but it tasted good. And that butchery was always busy, and it was just well branded. It was slick. And I thought, well, this could be something I could do back home. Maybe not have a slick butchery shop, but just sell our meat to Wellingtonians and basically deliver a premium product that they can't get at the supermarkets. So that was sort of a long rambling way of me saying why I decided to do that. But now that I've been in the business for nearly a year, the satisfaction of being a farmer, you toil away like all year round. It's quite a solitary job. You talk to your dogs a lot, you talk to sheep a lot, but you don't really talk to too many humans. And so what I've found is dealing with customers on a weekly basis, you get instant gratification and reward for the work that you're doing during the week, and you get constant feedback about how much people are enjoying the product that you're working to produce. And yeah, it's just been really fun.
I suppose it just adds that other element to being a farmer. And I think that's awesome. You know, it's not just out there restricted by your boundary fence, like you're getting out and about, you know, you're customer facing, all of those elements, which, yeah, it's a really good thing, I think, for some. I say it a lot about, like, even my role in live export. We talk about feeding the world, but sometimes we don't actually see who we're feeding.
Yeah.
And love it. It's like different, but similar in the sense I love going over to the Middle East and actually seeing, or even, you know, when I've gone into like Southeast, like, you know, into Vietnam or Indo, and actually seeing the families we're feeding, seeing the people we're feeding. There's a lot of satisfaction in that. So
it's so rewarding. And I think we do as farmers get, we do get stuck, not stuck. We do get into our rhythm and routine of the daily jobs that we do on a cycle every year. And then we sort of forget that, like, there are people out in this world that are just enjoying the fruits of our labor in a way. Like, yeah, it's part of doing what I do is in the city is to sort of try and help do my part to help bridge that rural urban divide that, that we all know exists and probably is getting worse over time.
Well, it contributes to it, doesn't it? Like, not to the divide, but to overcoming it. You're doing your part as a farmer, like, you know, to have those conversations. Has there been any tough conversations you've had in the selling of the meat?
Yeah, not too tough. A lot of people, so for people out there, Wellington is, I guess, for Australians, Wellington is like a combination of Canberra and Melbourne in terms of its demographic. There's a lot of centre or centre-left leaning people there. If vegetarianism or veganism was going to be at its highest, it would probably be in a city like Wellington. So that was always a big mental barrier for me, thinking that, oh, no one's going to want to eat meat because everyone, you know, with all the noise you hear, everyone's going that way. But we have a lot of very loyal customers that come up to us and have very positive interactions. It's sort of like a community there. And maybe one or two that I can think of that were a negative interaction, but they don't really want to come and interact with you. They just prefer to ignore you. Most of the negative stuff, if you do have them, as people online when they can hide behind a keyboard, you know. One of our taglines is, because our brand is Conscious Valley, and we are all about ethical farming. So basically letting our animals live a happy, natural, healthy life on beautiful hill country with a, you know, coastal view. What more could you want? But I have had a couple of people message me saying, what's ethical about killing sheep to get to eat? And it's like, well, yeah, you always get those sort of people, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. But a year doing this business, what, that's big, you know, that they say that's the first few years are the hardest. So what were the first steps you did? How did you even, so you found your mobile butcher, you know, how did you come up with your name, and what has been the biggest challenges so far, like things you couldn't have prepared yourself for?
How did we get into it? We bought the trailer, knowing that we wanted to have something that's quite professional in terms of a display. We didn't want to be selling meat out of chili bins or Huskies. And so we got that sorted. We got our paperwork with the council and regulation all sorted, and the butchers and the abattoir sorted. And that was all actually really easy, really. Like, I thought it was going to be a lot harder, but it was just conversations, getting procedures in place, and it happened. We decided on the name. That was honestly the hardest thing. Like, you focus, like, when you're starting a business, the hardest thing to do is to come up with a name and like a brand image. It's the funnest stuff, but it's the hardest, because once you commit to it, you know, that's you for a while. We were honestly, me and my partner Caroline, we were just sitting up on a bit of the farm one evening with a glass of wine, and we were just thinking, we were just spitballing names, you know, like, what is the brand about? Valley, because we live in a place called Ohariu Valley. So we wanted that in the name to represent the sort of geography, being quite close to Wellington. And then, yeah, the word conscious just sort of came to us, because we want people to think about
where the meat's coming from and like how it's being farmed and all those sorts of things. So that's just how it tied in, really.
Yeah. And I've heard you had to develop a good lamb shoulder pie recipe. Did you expect
we have
chef as well?
Yep. So we've finally got our. So we had pies for probably 3 months because it was a really good way of selling meat that we couldn't get sell fresh over the weekend. So we were finding that out of a carcass, it was really easy to sell loin, really easy to sell rack. And we were always left over with two or three legs and two or three shoulders because they're a big cut and you can't really, unless you're feeding a lot of people, you're not going to go out and spend $60 or $70 on a massive cut of meat. So with the boned out shoulders, we basically put them into pies, lamb, caramelized onions and rosemary pies. And I don't know if it's the same in Australia, but Kiwi love anything wrapped in pastry. And if it's tasty, meaty and it's wrapped in pastry, they really go for it. So that was a really cool way to add value to shoulder. And to the legs, we added value to that by I just started boning them out and marinating them and putting them on skewers. So, yeah, if it's in pastry or it's on a stick, it'll sell.
And how do you have to go to like a registered kitchen and have someone else do all that cooking? Like you obviously do the boning out. Like do you have a chef who does that or how does that process work?
So we've got a bakery doing the pies for us.
Amazing.
We've been supplying them for the last month, beef mince for their Wellington does a Wellington on a plate. It's like a special promotion to get people into restaurants through August. And they do every restaurant does a special burger. So we joined up with Pickle and Pie to do with our beef mince. And from that relationship, we've sort of, they're going to make our pies for us as well. So that's quite cool. And then for the other stuff, so my parents are quite entrepreneurial. Mum's got a purpose-built wedding venue on the farm. And so we can, because that's a registered kitchen, we can do some of the prep work in there for the butchery. Yeah.
And what's the long-term goals? So what are you, like, what else are you aiming for? Are you going to open a butcher shop or, and what's changed to when you started?
Okay, when we started, the goal was to, so one of the other motivators for starting the business was to have an outlet to sell, to add value to the lamb that we farm. Last year, we had a massive downturn in lamb prices. I think like a prime 21 kilo carcass was getting about $110 a head, which is, it's not sustainable long term. So adding value to that carcass, because land values are quite expensive, we can't afford to go and buy another farm. So if we can add value to that carcass somehow, it's going to be beneficial to us. We don't need to farm more sheep. We just need to make the sheep that we do farm more valuable. So the goal for us was to get rid of as many sheep as possible through the business to be at 100% of our prime lamb production after 3 years. So getting to the end of our first year, we'll probably do about 350 lambs out of 2,500. So we've got a wee way to go. But that's the fun part. That's the challenging part for me. The goals over the next sort of, 5 years is to be Wellington's number one premium red meat brand. And we're quite focused on keeping it in Wellington because that's our brand is all about local meat, supporting local businesses. So that's one thing. There we do have it is sort of in the pipelines to look at a butcher's shop, and the hard thing then is like you start branching away from your bread and butter, so that would be more staff and well actually not more staff, just staff. Because at the moment we do it all ourselves. So yeah, that'll be a challenge, but it's definitely up there, long-term goal. Farming wise, we want to, I guess, look at other neighbours and see if there's potential to lease their farms, because a lot of them are getting a little bit older, getting closer to retirement age, shall we say. So yeah, we can grow our business that way, and potentially, again, we'd need staff for that. So there's a lot of development to go in that phase. I've never been a boss, but I've always had very good bosses, so we just have to replicate what they did, I guess.
That leads into my next question, and it's about, well, I want to ask next, like, how you decided you want to come home to the farm, and I love how you prepared yourself, but I want to start off with your time as an agronomist.
Yep.
And do you think that it was like a farm, like an apprenticeship to come home? Like, I know a lot of my agronomy friends, they're like, oh, farmers, they don't get it. But was it harder than you thought being the actual farmer on the other end?
Yeah, definitely harder. But also most of the farm systems that I dealt with as an agronomist were quite different to what I deal with here. So as an agro, in New Zealand, you're dealing with pasture renewal and arable crops, which for this particular farm might make up 10% of the land area or 15% of the land area we can put into specialist land finishing forages. So I'm very comfortable in that space. I guess what the agronomy side of things did prepare you for is the whole cyclical nature of farming and like the mental preparation of like how things work on a yearly basis. And that nothing is, you don't get that instant gratification from farming. So that was one thing that I guess it prepared me, but it's really easy to make to recommend decisions for farmers to make because it doesn't have any financial implication to you as long as you're doing what you think would be best for their farm system. But when you are the one making that decision, it's a lot more stressful. So I found that was a challenge.
Mm. That's really, because like there'd be a bit more anxiety around. Do you outsource any of your stuff like that now, or do you just still, you're doing it yourself? You're like, oh, I've done a few years, I should be right.
You meant like the agronomy stuff?
Yeah.
Yes, I've got a... My agronomist or rural supplies agent is someone that I used to work with, which is really cool because we get along really well. And I only know what I remember. And I think even if you think you're very confident in what you do, you should always have people around you that can offer a different opinion or advice, because like Bo, he is getting constant refreshers and constant training on things. So what I knew as an agronomist from 6 years ago could be completely different or slightly changed. So, yeah, I'm comfortable in running my programs, but I always get in touch with him and make sure that there's nothing new that I'm missing out on.
Yeah, and I think we underestimate farmers. Like there's a lot of different things there. So agronomy in itself is really complex. Then you've got your land business, the banking, and even like your marketing. Do you do your own social media and stuff like that? Or do you, there's so many factors to running like a farming enterprise.
Oh, yeah. It's, we're not just people chasing sheep around paddocks. There's so much on. There's so much on. So much to juggle, which is that's the fun of it. Like, no day's the same, and it's never boring.
Well, how did you? So, what point did you decide to come back? When did you decide? Okay, I want to be a farmer. And how how did you make that happen?
Yeah, it's always been nibbling away at me. But I was told to go away and go and do something. You know.
Which I'm really glad. Go away, fly across the pond. Like.
Yeah, go away, go learn a trade in case you're really bad at farming. And then you
Unless you can't do all of those things we just discussed.
So, no, that was great advice because I got to see some really cool parts of New Zealand and Australia. But yeah, it was obviously always bubbling away behind the scenes that I wanted to come back. I'm very fortunate that mum and dad, I am sixth generation in this little farming community of farmers. So I was quite lucky that to be, born into this situation. But yeah, mum and dad had talked about it, and we just sort of had a pretty open discussion from quite early on, even from before I went to Australia. So initially the plan was do 2, maybe 3 years in Aussie and then go traveling for a bit, get that out of my system, come back, which was all going to plan until COVID hit. And I got an extra year and a half in Melbourne that I wasn't banking on, but that was fine. It was a fun time. You know, Melbourne is a very cool city, and I learned how to play Aussie rules, which is probably a skill that I'll never ever use again, but, you know, at least it helps break the ice.
Important skill though, for sure.
It helps break the ice, you know, when you're at the bar with about four Aussies and you say, oh, bloody hell, those Collingwood boys, they weren't too flash. And then, you know, it just gets the ball rolling. So that is always good. And then, yeah, went traveling for a year, which was so fun. Yeah.
And that was the bit. That's when you were like, right, I'm going home. What do I need to do before I make this commitment? I'm going to go traveling.
Yeah, going to go traveling.
Where did you go?
Most of Europe.
Yeah.
From, the Arctic Circle down to the Greek islands and across to Budapest, over to Ireland. You know, if you drew that sort of circle, probably ticked most of that off. And then spent just over 4 weeks in Africa, so doing Rwanda, Uganda, Tanzania and Kenya. And then on the way home, just dropped into Thailand and Vietnam.
Yeah. And when you got home, were you like, okay, I'm ready for this now? Like, I'm ready to sink my teeth into this? Or were you still nervous?
No, I was excited. Big thing
coming home.
It was never really too big a thing because I've always wanted it. I've always wanted to do it. So it was exciting. Yeah. It was just like, cool. I had a Huntaway and a heading dog, like jacked up, pre-trained for me to pick up when I got home. And then it was just the fun part about buying a whole lot of ewes and cattle and whatnot and setting up the farm, really.
Probably the other thing worth mentioning is even though it's a family farm, a lot of it you set up yourself, really, like your livestock and stuff. That's not something that you just, you know, got given to you.
So dad had leased the farm out for 4 years before I came back, which was quite cool because he got, I guess, some downtime. He'd been farming his whole life. He got some time to just, I guess, rest his body and do what he wanted to do, which was quite cool. It also probably gave him a bit of time to let go and, I guess, release control a bit. So, yeah, when I got home, I had to go out and buy all the ewes, all the rams, all the capital stock, basically. And I thought I was doing really well, actually, at the time. My average buy price for my ewes was about $157, which last year was like, that was pretty good shopping. 12 months later, they're worth, you know, 110, 120 bucks. And so that's farming. But hey, if I came a year later, would have been in a better position now, but it's a long-term game.
What's been the biggest challenges with your dad? Has some of the stuff you've come up with, like any quirky ideas or, hey, let's just make some pies, you know, has he been like, oh my gosh, this man, or has it all been pretty, you know, as expected?
It's my parents are amazing people. Like dad's very sort of, what's the right word for him? He's very, he'll give anything a go. And as when I was like an agro working up north, I'd come back and, you know, try and push these ideas onto him. He's like, you just do that when you come back. I'll leave that to you. I was like, oh yeah, fair enough. So yeah, he's amazing. He's he gives me help when I need it and advice when I ask for it, but there's no sort of unsolicited advice unless it's, you know, something really drastic. Hasn't happened yet, but yeah. And yeah, both my parents very supportive of everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And so this, so sheep prices have dropped drastically. What's some other challenges over there for you guys? And what do you think the biggest challenges as a sheep producer will be? And, you know, what are you foreseeing and how are you getting ready for that?
I think, I guess, New Zealand sheep industry's biggest challenge, and it has been for the last couple of years, is the pressure that we're getting from local council or regional councils, government, to initially it was with the carbon price being so high, there was just sheep and beef farms getting converted left, right and centre into pine trees. And now that sort of slowed down. But the new freshwater reform that was brought in, effectively they think reducing the sheep and beef population by about 25%. And converting that land into trees will clean up our waterways, which who knows if that's correct or not, but that's a massive challenge for us because as more areas get converted into forestry, rural communities across New Zealand become smaller. Like there's no longer all these different people working on farms, it's just trees. The infrastructure on processing will get tougher because plants will no longer have that supply of beef and lamb that they were used to. So yeah, it's a massive challenge for us. But I think if you get away from the political side of that, it's probably similar to a lot of places across the world. Our costs have all increased significantly in a commodity period where the price of what we produce has dropped. So that's always challenging to keep the books in the black, not too far in the red. Drench resistance, like internal parasite resistance to drenches. I think about 30% of New Zealand sheep farms that have been tested have triple drench resistance. And yeah, that's probably some, if I was to have three.
I think it was... So I'll let you talk about it. So the program we were part of in part of LAMEX, the Next Gen Global Program, there was young sheep farmers from around the world. And I think it was really interesting. Like a lot of us had very different style enterprises, but similar challenges, I think, we're finding across the globe. And what's your project idea? So we did this week together. We went around to different farms and then you can elaborate more. And then now we're doing a project. So what's your project with your group?
Our group's doing internal parasite resistance, and it was one thing that we noticed that all four of us had problems with in our country. So it's been really interesting seeing how, like, why it's a challenge.
What countries are part of your group? Who's in there?
We have Canada, the US, the UK, and New Zealand. So quite lucky that there's no Australians, because it means our time zones are a lot more like compact. It's easier to catch up as a group.
It's hard. The time zones are hard. Yeah. It's nothing like talking about talking about access to medication at midnight.
Exactly. Poor Ed, the English guy on our group, he's always up quite late.
Yeah.
Always first thing in the morning for me, which suits me. I'm a morning person.
And what about, so after spending a week with all of these sheep farmers, what shocked you the most, or what were you surprised to learn from everybody?
The most shocking thing for me was that there's flocks of sheep in North America that do not go outside. Like, it is just so foreign for us. We have no sheep indoors apart from shearing. They have one night a year indoors when we're getting them ready for shearing, and that's about it. So that was just mind-blowing for me. The predator problems that everyone else has, including you guys with your foxes and your wild dogs. We just have no predators over here. We might have like the odd bit of dog worrying, but it's not like we have to worry about a pack of hungry coyotes coming to destroy our flock, you know?
Yeah. No, that was really interesting, and how they all basically over there were running, like guardian dogs with them permanently out in the paddock, which, is fascinating.
Guardian dogs or llamas?
Yeah, and the alpacas and stuff. No, that was, I'd never even thought about that. Coyotes just coming in to eat all my sheep at night. Like, You said it earlier, like contractors. So you guys struggle for contractors over there. How does it work with your teams?
So we don't struggle for shearing gangs. We've got a really good shearing gang. It's more like we're not big enough to have our own tractor machinery, drill, everything like that, spray rig. So we've got to rely on contractors to do that for us.
Mm.
And because we're away, like geographically, we are, you drive through suburbia of Wellington to get out to our place. So for machinery to get out to us is often a little bit challenging. And we are lucky that we have a processing, like an abattoir, 10 minutes drive from us. That's one thing, one strength that's made Conscious Valley work.
Mm.
Is that our processing plants in our back door, basically. And then, yeah, the other contractors that we use, that's basically it. Oh, fertilizer, that all goes on with a chopper because there's wind turbines all over the farm.
Yeah.
We used to use planes, but they can't fly their beautiful straight lines with turbines, dodging turbines everywhere. Yeah.
That's I'd never thought about that. That's so cool. No, because it's something. It makes sense that New Zealand doesn't struggle. I suppose we struggle for shearers over here, but we get a lot of ironically New Zealanders coming over, which is good and bad depending on who you speak to. Good in the sense that we like workforce, but then there's always that you know, those coming in from other countries.
At least you know you're getting good shearers.
Says the New Zealander. We're getting leading into the hardest question. I want to quickly touch on what you love. So you're a year into running your lamb business. You love working, you know, seeing who you're feeding, working with the consumers. But what else do you love about what you do?
Oh, like basically, why do I love being a farmer?
Yeah. And why should everyone be a farmer? Because I think we, I don't know, after a week with different farmers, I'm like, we should be talking about it more. More people should be becoming farmers.
I don't think everyone could be a farmer, to be honest. But if you love, we definitely need to like attract more young people into the industry. And I think if I was to do like a 30-second sales pitch, which might turn into 2 minutes, I'll just say that I love farming because in my situation, I get to be my own boss. And so maybe I love being self-employed. There's obviously the pay is terrible, the hours are long, but everything that you do is for the benefit of like yourself, your family, and those around you. I love farming because I've always enjoyed doing physical work. Like I really, in my brain works better once I've been doing some physical activity. Whether it's less anxiety, better mental health, my body just and mind just thrive off doing something physical. I enjoy being outdoors. I enjoy the interaction between human and dog and like, and just the fact that what you're doing is growing this like delicious food. I think one thing that drives me is food. I just love nice food. You know, like Melbourne was a great city for me because I'm a real foodie. and that's probably the main reason I do what I do is to help try and produce some of, you know, the world's best food.
I suppose, do you have a good lamb recipe or how do you recommend? Surely after being in Melbourne, being a foodie, now being a farmer and having your own lamb brand.
Yeah.
You know, how should someone be cooking lamb? I know people listening to this podcast, they're probably already going to be like, oh, I just cook it how mum does. I already know. But I want to know how can, you know.
Depends what you want. Like.
Well, what's the best, way?
You tell me what you want to. I'll cook it for you.
Do you get asked that a lot at markets too?
Yeah.
That surprised me from LambX. The stats around how many people don't know how to cook lamb.
Yep.
And then that they're cooking it once, cooking it poorly, and never going back to purchase lamb again. I was shocked to learn that. Yeah.
And it's because it's an expensive protein, they don't want to buy it and stuff it up. And I get that. I love cooking lamb anyway. Like I love curries. slow cooked, like, you know, like a red wine, tomato-y based lamb shank recipe is always going to be good. Fill it with garlic and onion, those sorts of things. Anything, any, even your traditional roast, like, you can't go wrong if you've got a, if you've got the right piece of lamb. But in all honesty, Tiff, like, if I was telling someone to go and try some lamb for the first time, I'd tell them to go into a butcher and get some, either get some loin chops or some lamb lollipops, like lamb rack chops, and just put them in the oven with salt and pepper and cook them to your liking. I like to put the loin chop on its flat side on the bone, so then the whole tail and loin is just sticking up, and you get like a really nice even cooking, like from the meat. When you've got the tail sticking upright, all the fat just drips down and keeps the chop nice and moist. And when you've got salt and pepper over it, the meat is the hero, and like there's nothing, it's just unadulterated, beautiful tasting meat, you know? Yeah.
That is how everyone should make a lamb debut. And now, where can people buy your lamb?
Well, it's my plug for Tourism Wellington, I guess. Our lamb is exclusive to the Wellington region in New Zealand. So we currently sell our lamb through the farmers market in Wellington City. And we will look to get into a couple of local, like, boutique supermarkets and maybe start an online store. But the online store will only be for delivery in, like, the Wellington area. I'm so, like, proud of to be a Wellingtonian that I want Wellingtonians to recognise this meat as their meat. Mm. We're not eating Hawke's Bay lamb anymore. We're not eating South Island lamb. We have our own beautiful tasting source of red meat for the city, and hopefully people who visit Wellington will be able to try it. We've got some incredible restaurant partners, Damascus. They're a really nice Syrian food restaurant. WBC, they're a really nice restaurant as well. And then Jarno Bistro, those are our three big ones at the moment that you can, if you don't want to cook it yourself, you can go to those restaurants.
Awesome. And I think this is the hardest question. We usually ask it at the start, but I'm going to ask it at the end. Three words to describe yourself.
Oh, I hate describing myself. it's like the worst thing you can ask a farmer. The three things that would describe myself: I'm very analytical. Like I like to analyze things and love numbers, that sort of thing. I am fun-loving. Like, if you're going to do anything in life, it should always be fun. So whether it's, you know, doing what you do on your farm, what you do in your personal life, say no if you're not going to enjoy it and just go and do something fun. Like, life's too short to not have fun. And then I'm quite like open-minded. So I enjoy trying new things. I really enjoy meeting new people and like finding about a bit about them. I quite like to try new things if people ask me, you know, different foods, different experiences. I'm always open to new ideas and doing things differently. So yeah, those three would be me: open-minded, analytical, and fun-loving, which is five words, but that's all right. Bit of jest. Have you heard anyone?
Oh, awesome. Anything else? What were your other, anything else, were your big takeaways from Lambex, or anything you want to add?
I just really was really impressed, to be honest, it was my first time being on the producer side. I've always been there on the rep side, and being there on the producer side and seeing all the presentations and, you know, interacting with everyone, like, the Australian sheep industry is in a really good space, and you guys are really positive, which is really cool to see. Hopefully the fella who was talking about sheep meat future prices is bang on the money, because $10 a kilo looks pretty good to me in 5 years' time. So I'll happily play that long game. But yeah, the main thing was that sheep farmers are sheep farmers. We all have so much in common. We are a small protein on the world scale, and we need to stop thinking of each other as competition when in reality the real competition is, you know, the chickens, the porks, the factory farmed, you know, white meat that's very efficient and very cheap, but maybe not as nutritious as our product. We need to focus on telling our story as an industry worldwide to get more sheep meat on the table. Like, the US eat 500 grams of sheep meat per person per year, yet they eat 26 kilos of beef, and they eat more pork than beef, and they eat more chicken than pork. So if you can switch any of that protein into lamb in a country like the US, New Zealand and Australia won't be competing against each other. We won't be able to supply it. So we just all need to work collaboratively together to try and grow the sheep meat.
And even for the US, like, a lot of the sheep farmers from over there were saying they hate seeing like Aussie or New Zealand lamb on the shelves. Yeah. But yet now they realise like that it needs to happen for that consumer base to grow. Yeah. So it's a complex thing, isn't it? And like in the ideal world, I think every farmer would love their meat to be consumed by those in the general vicinity or even within a country. But it's not the case. And for lamb to grow long term, we've got to be sending it around the world. So it's an interesting thing.
It is, yeah.
In regards to lamb prices, with like it, well, hopefully set to increase and stay up there, do you think, with your consumer base and the relationship you have with your consumers, like your customers, if will they continue to pay, like if it increases, will they continue to pay that because of that relationship you've built?
Yeah, I think our consumers will pay for that. We have very strong relationships with the people that they know where their meat's coming from. They buy into the value proposition that we're providing. As the lamb price lifts, we are in a unique position where we can sort of pay the farm a little bit less in order to like have a slightly more stable retail price. So yeah, if supermarkets have to put their prices up, it's a good thing for us. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Hamish. I don't know about you, but I know I'm going to track down one of his lamb pies when I'm in New Zealand next. After this recording, he actually sent me a picture of one straight out of the oven, and they looked good. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for our next episode with another young person who loves their sheep.